welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and I'm pleased to have back as my guest Christopher Vasey. Today we're interviewing him on his new book, Natural Antibiotics and Antivirals, 18 Infection-Fighting Herbs and Essential Oils. In these days of multiple antibiotic resistances and antibiotic side effects, it's good to know that we have natural alternatives to fighting bacteria and viruses. And the book also contains quite a bit of information on detoxification and maintaining healthy flora, cellular terrain, that type of thing that can prevent you from becoming ill in the first place. Welcome, Christopher. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, hello, Susan.
So do you remember when you were on Temple of Health Radio Show before?
Yes, several times even.
Several times, right. Well, you're a naturopath, and you specialize in detoxification. And I think we did I think we did natural remedies for inflammation before. But in any case, you're in Switzerland, and do you want to give the audience a little bit of your background and how you became interested in natural medicine?
Yes, well, it started a long time ago, nearly 40 years ago. When I was a student, I was, like many people, I saw that we became ill just by lack of chance. But then I realized that it wasn't really the case, because I saw in my surrounding two people who got ill, and I could clearly see that it was the way they lived, the way they ate and so forth, which made them ill. And that's when I started to think more about the situation of health being or ill. And at that time, just a bit later on, there was a talk in town by a naturopath, and I went to see what he had to say, but I didn't know anything about the subject. And he explained what was naturopathy, that the way we ate was important for our health, because if we ate too much or bad foods, too fat or so forth, we would accumulate a lot of toxins in the body, and that would get us ill and so forth. And I was so amazed and enthusiastic about all he said. So at the end of the talk, I asked him, where did you learn all that? And he said, he told me the school it was in. And straight away, I registered and started my naturopathic studies. And that was 50 years ago. And
since then,
I've been practicing naturopathy, and practicing, but also writing books on the subjects. I write them in French, because I live in the French-speaking part of Switzerland, and then they are translated, published in Switzerland, France, but then some are translated by Inner Tradition, a publisher in the States, and are sold in the States,
Well, this particular book is one that I think is particularly useful because of the scope of it. You know, you've obviously had a lot of clinical experience treating these different infections, and so you go through very many different types of infections and problems that people can have, and give specific recommendations, which I think is very useful.
Yeah. Because some people know one can use plants or essential oils and so forth, but then they don't know how to adapt this knowledge to their own case. So that's why there's about 50 different, common illnesses and the way suggestions how to treat them with those natural antibiotics. It's a book which wants to be very practical so that people can help themselves and understand how to deal with the different plants and how to take them.
So, you know, antibiotic usage is fairly recent in history. I guess penicillin was the first antibiotic discovered, and I don't remember exactly when that was, but I don't think it was before 1900, was it? Do you remember exactly?
No, I think it's 1920s, something like that.
Right. So we don't have a very long history at all of less than 100 years probably of antibiotic use. And So your first chapter is the history of natural antibiotics. Would you like to make any points about that, about how long the history of using natural antibiotics goes back?
Well, as we said just now, penicillin was discovered in the 1920s, and it was really a wonderful discovery, because up to then, many people would die of infection without the doctors knowing really what to do, being very effective to cure these illnesses. But and therefore, it's antibiotics are a great help, and it's true, the modern ones. But the reason why the doctors didn't know how to treat infection so well is because the knowledge about plants having antibiotic virtues was lost on the way. Because very far back, the old ancient Egyptians and the Greeks and Indians and so forth, I mean from India, they knew about those plants, they used them, and also small tribes in faraway places like in Madagascar or Ceylon or just so forth. They knew plants, they used them, but it was very local. And so there's nothing new. Those antibiotics have been known from a very long time, but they were plants, coming from plants. And in the 1920s, the modern antibiotics were discovered. And they didn't come from plants, but they came from microbes, because microbes produce substances to protect themselves from pathogenic germs. And these substances can be used by human beings to fight illnesses. So there are two different kinds of sources of antibiotics.
Now, back in the days of the plague, popular history is that they used essential oils, a combination of essential oils called thieves. The thieves would spray themselves with these mixture of oils and go rob the bodies and not get the plague. I don't know if that's a true story, but it's certainly an interesting one. So essential oils were used. The plague was back in, I think, the 14 and 1500s, wasn't it?
Well, there were many, at that time, yeah. And they knew that it worked against infections. Well, they didn't know really what was an infection and all that. In practice, they knew it would work, so they used it and successfully for many people. Yeah.
Do you know any other stories of essential oils back in history, maybe in more ancient history?
Well, the Egyptians used essential oils to make, I'm not sure about the English words, but when someone was dead, they would put a lot of essential oils and plants in the body, dead body.
To preserve
to
them,
it.
Yeah.
And it worked, as we found many of these bodies, mummies. We found them 2,000 years afterwards. They were still there, so it really works. These essential oils killed the microbes which wanted to putrefy the corpse.
Yeah. The nice thing about essential oils, I have a scar treatment called Scarmedic that is essential oil based. And what I tell people is the other scar treatments expire because they do expire. And the essential oils never expire, or probably never within our lifetime would expire, because they're still very potent and they don't expire because things are going to go not work in them. So that's very useful too. So I think I think they have found essential oils in the some of the Egyptian areas that were still fairly potent, even though they were thousands of years old. Yeah. So unless you're going to live a couple thousand years, you can you don't have to worry about your essential oils expiring.
No, that's true. Yeah.
So your next chapter is called Germs, and I think this is an analysis of the different things that we're targeting with the natural treatments. Of course, you have bacteria, you have parasites, viruses and other
and
things.
Fungi and yeast, yeah. Those are the four, parasites, bacteria, mm-hmm. fungi, yeast, and viruses, yeah.
Right.
And
of course,
usually when
antivirals,
we talk about...
Yeah, antivirals are, there aren't that many antivirals, and there's a lot of viruses that we've got nothing that work against. So the natural remedies are very important for viruses.
Yeah, and that's the big difference between natural antibiotics and, in the broad sense of the word, and the pharmaceutical antibiotics, is that the antibiotics that the doctor gives do not work against viruses, but nearly all of the natural antibiotics, though plants, have a powerful effect against viruses. And as you just said, the doctors don't have many antiviruses medicine. So, and nowadays there are more and more virus around, people getting ill because of viruses, and being very ill or dying because there's no treatment for them. Because doctors, I mean, allopathic doctors, are not often open enough for the moment to plants, because there are many antivirals which could help the population to cure themselves.
So the next chapter talks about infectious diseases and the idea that, some of the... reasons, I mean, we don't just get infections because we get exposed to a germ or virus or bacteria. We actually get infections because of the tissue vitality, which I think is a very, very important point.
And the idea is that a microbe is a living being, which needs a surrounding which suits it to be able to stay alive and multiply. It needs food to eat and so forth. And when a microbe comes in our body, what's the interior of our body, that is the cellular terrain, the terrain is the inside of the body, can be in good shape, healthy, and therefore it's very difficult for the microbe to survive, because the body is too healthy. But if a body is full of toxins, that is waste products, which are stagnating in the blood, in the tissues, in the organs, and also there is a lack of vitamins and minerals and so forth, we said in natural medicine that the terrain is in a bad shape, it's saturated of toxins. This kind of terrain is a marvelous surrounding for microbes, many microbes to develop. And therefore, it's all question of what, with infections, it is not only a question of what is the microbe coming in, it's what kind of terrain is receiving it. If we are strong, have a strong terrain, the microbe will not survive. But if it's a weak terrain, it will survive, multiply, and we have an infection and a strong infection. So that's why, the Frenchman who discovered microbes and many things about them, Pasteur, he said apparently, just before dying, he said, the germ is nothing, the terrain is everything.
Right.
Well, I'm not sure that he really said it, but the idea is that the germ is not so important. What is really important is the terrain, the body in which it comes. If the body is healthy, it can fight against the infection.
Well, let me give you a good example of that. As you know, you may not know, but I treat women who have been had defective breast implants. So with the silicone implant, they have chemical and silicone toxicity. And then with the saline implant, it can grow mold, and they can have biotoxicity from mold, which, as you know, affects T-cell immunity.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
When women have been gone through this, for years afterwards, their immune system can be very challenged, and they can get viruses, they can get intracellular infections, parasites, yeast, and mold, and then, of course, have an increased risk of cancer because it's all T-cell immunity. And even bacterial infections are more common because they've got such a bad flora, especially a gut flora. So, this type of thing shows is just an example of chemical toxicity, which you don't have to have implants to have, obviously. If you have a detoxification defect or if you have exposure to a lot of heavy metals and chemicals in your diet and environment, your immune system is going to suffer. And so you can get all these viruses, every time your kid comes home with a cold from the daycare or the school, you're going to get it, whereas your spouse may not. And so that's how you know you have a problem.
Yeah. And it's an important point because, as you just said, viruses around all in the house, in the town even, and some people get ill straight away, others never do, will not be
right.
ill with these viruses. The reason for this is that the terrain is good or bad. And also in the past, when there were big epidemics, there were no antibiotics to fight against them, but many people survived those epidemics. There were never all the population which died. There were only, two-thirds at the maximum. There was always one-third about which survived because the terrain was strong.
Yeah, it makes you wonder. You see on TV when the plagues come through in England during the Tudor time, they'd close the castle up, or the king and queen would run to the countryside and close that up.
Yeah.
So they did know that exposure was important. They might not have understood germ theory, but they knew that if they could, get away, over land. Put land or water between you and the infected area and then not let anybody in where you were, that would be protective. So, I often wonder, how much they really knew, how much they,
But I think, as you say, they didn't know
really understood.
They knew that there was a possibility of contagion. They should move away. And it must have been very scary because they didn't know how it happened, but they just knew, I've got to go away, because the germs were not discovered at that time.
Right. And you remember the story of Nostradamus. He was a doctor, and he survived the plague, but his family didn't. And, of course, I'm sure a lot of his patients died of the plague. So here you have Nostradamus having survived it. And, it's just very interesting history that... But of course, he became very depressed because he lost so much.
But I can imagine one can become quite depressed if half the town is dead.
And you're the doctor, and you can't save them. That's another level of responsibility
there.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah.
And then you survive, and you have survivor's guilt, So.
Yeah.
But in any case, he started his spiritual practices and, of course, gave us all the gifts of his prophecies out of that. So something good came out of it. So the next chapter is on pharmaceutical antibiotics, and right now we're limited in the number of antibiotic types that we have. There's cell wall types, there's types that go inside the cell, which are good for intracellular infections, but the problem with intracellular infections is they change all the time. And you have to keep changing things, whether you're using natural antibiotics or pharmaceuticals. So some of these organisms are very, very smart, and they can do all sorts of things to ward off things that are too specific. Because antibiotics are very specific in their mechanism of action, whereas the essential oils are probably not so specific. And the more specific you are in your mechanism of action, then the germ or the organism can change something and then protect itself. So
it's an important point that the microbe is a living being and it wants to survive. So if it's attacked by antibiotics, it will try to survive. And they, as you say, they're very clever, and they can find a way of either neutralizing in a way or another the effect mm-hmm. of the antibiotic. But for that, they have to be in contact with it for a certain time and not die straight away. But as soon as they've built the system to fight the antibiotic, they build a resistance against the antibiotic, then they mm-hmm. will transmit this resistance to the other, to all its descendants and to
right.
other microbes. And therefore, when the doctor uses the antibiotic, for the germ, it's no problem because he knows how to fight against
right.
it.
Right, yeah.
And that's why the number of pharmaceutical antibiotic was a certain number at the beginning, but a few of them or many of them cannot be used so much anymore because
right.
the microbes have built resistance against them. And that's
yeah,
the problem.
And
yeah.
that's very scary. You know, when you've got a burn patient in the burn unit and you have a Pseudomonas growing that's resistant to every known antibiotic, that's very scary. Because that Pseudomonas is going to go quickly in and produce toxins that kill the patient. But there's three things that I'm thinking of: copper, silver, and ozone. And those can be used in various ways. Like we use wound care with silver sheetings. Copper's been used, and of course ozone can be given as well. And those resistances are not possible. In other words, at least it says in the medical literature that resistance to copper and silver does not occur.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
Well, I didn't know it. I'm glad to hear it. But I would just like to add that with the natural antibiotics, the microbes have it's very difficult for them to build resistance against natural antibiotics. Because
right.
The modern antibiotics, the doctor's antibiotics, are made of just a few molecules, one, two, or three mm-hmm. molecules, so we say to be simple. But in the plants used as antibiotics, there might be 15 or 30 different molecules, and that's too many for a microbe to build resistance. It can against one
right.
or two substances, but not so many. So there are no resistance against natural antibiotics and antivirals. Which is
I think they do too many different types of things. You know, it's not just one physiological function that they're aimed at. They do different things because at different levels, and then that one bacteria that's totally resistant to everything just doesn't happen. So, you know, it's very different than if you're trying to just do one thing, and then, you know, after thousands of replications, one bacteria is resistant, and then of course it doesn't take long for a bacteria to replicate, so you know, so that resistant bacteria starts taking over and passing its solution to other bacteria. So that's very true. You talk about molecular complexity too, that the conventional antibiotics don't have molecular complexity. I think that's an interesting idea.
I think the main mistake which was done that is that when they discovered penicillin and then other antibiotics, they were so happy to use them that they used them mm-hmm. in excess for
and
small
for
things when it was not necessary for small
mm-hmm.
problems. And
like
therefore the microbes were too often in contact with them and they could build resistance.
Yeah, that's why, you know, people come to the doctor to want to be given an antibiotic when they have an upper respiratory infection but don't have any evidence of bacteria. And we are warned against that because of antibiotic resistances.
There's a tendency
they put the antibiotic in the food. You know, that's really, you know, in cattle and other food sources.
Yeah.
And that
this increases the contact of the microbes with the antibiotics and builds resistance. But another common mistake is on the side of the patient, because some people are aware it's not good to take too many antibiotics and so forth. So when they follow a treatment, they don't follow it correctly. They decide by themselves, I will take less of the antibiotic and I will not take it as long as I as it said. So I don't take too many antibiotics. But then they are in a situation where they are not taking enough and long enough to kill the microbe. So the microbe is in contact with the antibiotic that is not killed. So it can work to find a resistance, and it does. And then, well, for this person, this antibiotic will not work anymore.
Right. Yeah, that's very true. That's something that they teach us as well. So, so we are facing problems, and you understand this when you look at worldwide infectious disease statistics, that vancomycin resistant Enterococcus exists now. There are literally real serious, usually hospital-based problems with respirators and colon surgery and that kind of thing. But they're actually having significant problems with finding antibiotics to use against these organisms with multiple resistances that are very deadly. So some of the, I think some of the other countries, I'm not sure about the U.S. so much, are using other treatments, like you can put different things in respirator systems whereby you use silver-coated things to so that you can get kill the organisms that are going in the air. In other words, you could do silver filters. So I think other countries are doing this. I'm not sure the U.S. is so much because it's controlled by the pharmaceutical industry, but I'm sure you're aware of some of the things that they're doing in Europe that use essential oils and use the other treatment modalities that are more natural to help prevent hospital-based infections.
I'm not so sure. I think you think in Europe it's better, but it's not that better, no. Doctors usually use antibiotic, and that's it. And they're not too open to, except some doctors are open and study the subject, and they use them. But in big hospitals, it's not so different. I don't think it is now.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, for the patients.
Yeah. Well, it's not good because if you give so many antibiotics, one thing that almost always happens is you throw the gut flora off. And diarrhea, bloating, the gut doesn't work, and then it's much more difficult to get the patient well when their gut flora is off.
Yeah.
So that becomes a big problem. Now, there are some, just so you know, there are a couple of prescription probiotics here in the U.S. One's called VSL, and it's marketed for ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, but it works quite well, I think, in helping to prevent C. diff and other things. So sometimes in the hospital you can order that. You have a much harder time with non-prescription things, but almost anything that's a prescription you can get into the hospital, which is interesting.
Yeah. And the problem of the intestinal flora is that, well, it's destroyed by the antibiotics. And this flora is important to be able to digest correctly, but it also has the advantage of being constituted of many germs, but not dangerous germs, most of them not dangerous. And these germs can fight against the pathogenic germs which come in the digestive tube. So if someone has a good flora, the pathogenic germs coming with the food or with the drinks will be destroyed by the intestinal flora. They will not even start an infection. But when the intestinal flora is in a bad state, well, it's the opposite. The pathogenic germs can develop and give an infection.
Yeah, it's the flora. It's the terrain. So the terrain of a healthy gut helps prevent infection from whatever's coming in, even parasites. It's interesting. A lot of my patients have animals that have parasites and intracellular infections, and the patient has both of them, but the husband doesn't. So the husband's intestinal flora You know, when the dog licks itself and then licks you, licks your lips, it's transferring a lot of stuff onto your lips that you might not necessarily want, especially if your immune system's not good. So, but the husband's not sick at all, and I think most parasites do cause GI problems if they overgrow, and of course intracellular infections do cause systemic problems. But it's just interesting that the state of the immune system, the state of the gut flora, those are all very important. The other thing I wanted to point I wanted to make is that Dr. Perlmutter here in the U.S. found that he could cure 100% of his cases of adult-onset diabetes by giving fecal transplantations. And the science behind that is interesting because it's disruption of the gut flora with one particular bacteria that absorbs some a factor that is needed, and if you don't have it, you get insulin resistance. So I've since learning that, I've paid attention to some of my patients, and many of them developed adult-onset diabetes after an antibiotic course. So that's a whole different, interesting, because we're all, you know, we're taught in medicine, it's all, well, you eat too much sugar, but that can't be true because a lot of people eat too much sugar, and they don't develop adult-onset diabetes, so...
Yeah,
I thought that was interesting. So that even adult onset diabetes is probably one of the most common, one of the most expensive diseases because you know you tend to live a fairly long time and you have a whole bunch of morbidities with it that cost money. So we probably spend a huge amount of the healthcare budget on something that could be cured with if we could figure out how to do it easier than a fecal transplantation, which I'm sure we could. We could cure that disease, which would be really helpful in with the cost of health insurance. So we have a lot to learn. We really do.
Yes, we do.
So the next section you have is on the essential oils. Would you like to talk a little bit about them and how they work for these antimicrobial actions and if we even know? I don't even know that we know how they work.
Well, essential oils, when one takes a leaf of peppermint in our hand and squeeze it a bit, there's a perfume which comes out of the leaf, and it's the essential oil of the leaf. And by a special process, this essential oil can be taken out of the plant and then you put in a bottle to be used. And one needs to use a lot of plants. 100 kilos of eucalyptus leaves will give only 3 kilos of essential oil. And 100 kilos of thyme will give 200 grams of essential oil. So what I mean by that, it's really very concentrated, very powerful oil. And this oil will destroy the microbes either by attacking the membrane, external membrane, so that it bursts and then all the liquid in the cell will come out and, of course, the microbe will die. Or it can also neutralize the activity of some of the organs of the microbes or destroy them and so forth. And its essential oils are very powerful. The question is that we have to find a good way of giving the body a lot of essential oil because it's very, but it cannot, well, how shall I say it? You cannot give the body too much essential oils because it's quite concentrated and we want the essential oil at special parts in the body. So, but we have found, well, naturopaths has found with time, ways of taking it. We can swallow a few drops or we can put a few drops on the skin above the region which one to treat and so forth. And then the essential oil will come in the body very quickly and be in the point which is ill and fight against the microbes. And it's way of fighting it against it is to, as I just said, kill the microbe. That's one or in one way or another, but it also helps destroy the microbes because it changes the pH of the, that is the degree of acidity of the terrain. And very small changes of the pH, it can be a tenth of a unit, can give a surrounding which is not favorable for the microbe. And therefore, mm-hmm. it will weaken or even die. So that's right. the way the essential oil work. Yeah.
So the essential oil probably known to most of the listeners is tea tree, because you find it in mouthwash, toothpaste, and shampoos and everything. You want to talk a little bit about tea tree and how that came to be discovered and what it works well for?
Yes. Well, I don't know when it was discovered, because people living in Australia before it was colonized by white people, they used mm-hmm. Tea tree. It's a tree which grows in Australia, and the natives used it against many different ailments, and especially infections. And it's mm-hmm. well known in Australia and now all over the world. But at that time, during the First World War, Australian soldiers, each of them received a small bottle of tea tree essential oil mm-hmm. to cure themselves of all the small skin problems, mainly burns or wounds and so forth, because it's mm-hmm. Very effective with skin problems. Not only, but right. At that point too, yeah. And during the Boer War, it was also used a lot because it helped the healing process of when people were lost a leg or were operated on an arm. Mm-hmm. It would help the healing processes. But here we're not in the antibiotic action. But it's well known, and as you say, now it's spread all over the world, and nearly everybody knows what tea tree is.
Yeah, you can use tea tree like as a vaginal douche, like 1% tea tree. So it's 1 cc per 100 cc's of fluid, and douche with it, and then douche later with lactobacillus to put the flora back in. And I've treated a number of women who have been through all sorts of other treatments that failed, but that one worked fine. So tea tree is effective against bacteria and fungus, which is important in the vagina, and also parasites, because you have the trichomonas sometimes. So it's probably the only one that would treat all of those in the vagina. It's very effective.
Well, there are many other, like neroli or thyme or oregano, which will act on yeast, fungi, and bacteria. Many of the natural antibiotics will act on the four different kinds of microbes, as we said, parasite, bacteria, fungi, and mm-hmm. viruses. So then it's a question of taking one or the other, which is maybe less aggressive for the mucous membranes and so forth. So.
Yep. Now, the next section you have is called the mother tinctures. You want to explain that?
Yep. Yeah, it's a preparation in which healing plant is put into alcohol so that the active substances will be taken out of the plant and go into the alcohol. And in mm-hmm. the past, that was done in general, but now there are mother tinctures, and it's a way of doing it in which there is a very specific amount of active substances. There is one-tenth of the preparation is correspond to dry plants, or the plants dried, and nine-tenths mm-hmm. alcohol. So that means that the tincture has the same power if every year, because depending on the year, plants are more or less powerful, active against illnesses,
right.
Because they receive more sun or less sun and so forth. And mm-hmm. you can buy a mother tincture in the United States or here in Switzerland. You dose it the same way, because it's mm-hmm. always the same power, which was not the case in the past. So it's another way of using herbal remedies, as antibiotics. And there are many which can be used. One which is also very well known is the purple cone flower, Echinacea.
Echinacea.
Yeah. That's
Yeah, echinacea should not be used every day, though. People have to understand that echinacea is like an antibiotic. It needs to be used just when you're fighting the organism, not every day.
No. Well, here in Europe, we use it as preventive. Some people take it even if they're not sick, because this plant has an antibiotic effect, but it also will stimulate the immune system to work better. It increases
the
production of...
Well, maybe a small dose, but you don't want to take a large dose.
No.
You don't want to take a therapeutic dose.
In fact, smaller dose repeated with breaks is more effective than longer treatment. That's true, yeah.
Right, yeah. So,
but other plants like...
Yeah.
I would just to give another example, because I think echinacea is well known. But for cystitis, for example, there's... the mouse ear oakweed, which is very effective. The person has to take three times 30 to 50 drops, and it has a powerful antibiotic action. And
Sorry? I didn't know about that one. That's interesting.
Yeah. It's one in my book, one of the mother
tinctures.
Yeah. In fact,
so it has a diuretic
plants, which can be
as well. That's good. Yeah. So then you talk about other natural antibiotics, grapefruit seed extract, and...
Yes. The history of the discovery of grapefruit seed extract is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It was a searcher or doctor, and he was surprised to see that in his compost, the seeds of grapefruits did not decompose as the rest of the things he threw in it. And he thought that's strange, and he tried to find out why. And he discovered that in the seeds there was an antibiotic substance which was very powerful, and that explained why it didn't decompose. But then he tried this substance on human beings to see if it would cure different infections, and it worked very well. He says that it would kill any microbes which shows up. And now it's very, well, quite commonly used everywhere. It's quite concentrated, and therefore one has to dilute it, take it with enough water so that it doesn't burn the skin if one puts it on the skin, or if one swallows it, that it doesn't burn the digestive tube.
Well, that's interesting. And then there's Pock Diarco. I give this to almost all of my patients. When I have them on antibiotics, I'll treat them with Nystatin oral solution, which is an antifungal to prevent yeast overgrowth. But then that gets resistant, and I switch them over to Pock Diarco. And there's some yeast infections or contaminations of the gut that cause really painful gut swelling, you know, just real sudden swelling if you eat sugar, that the only thing I've found is Corpoc Diarco to take care of it. So use that in every patient.
This is the bark of a tree which grows in South America, and people in that part of the world have been using that plant for a very long time. Apparently, the Incas also used it, so it's an old story. But it's effective, and that's why it's good to use it.
It's also against parasites, like Trypanosoma cruzi, which causes sleeping sickness. That's interesting. That is interesting.
Yeah, it is.
I didn't know
and
that.
And I've heard also against malaria. Yeah.
Hmm. And you can also take it as a tea.
Yes.
You want to do a tea and topical as well. Now, this is one that we've heard of, or some of us have heard of. Probably not all the listening audience knows about it, but propolis. That's a very, very powerful antibiotic.
Yeah. Well, propolis is something which it's a viscous substance which is used by the bees in the beehive as cement and varnish. And it comes from resin from the trees. So the bees take it from the tree, and then they mix it with something in their stomach, and it produces propolis, which is, as I said, it's like varnish for the inside of the bee hive. But it's also, it has antibiotic properties. And it is necessary that there is something like that in the beehive, because when you think of those 30 or 40,000 bees coming in and out, in contact with all sorts of things outside, bringing back microbes, there must be something to fight against them. And it's naturally done by this propolis. So propolis can be extracted from the beehive and then used as an antibiotic. It can, it's, one can take a kind of paste or fragments of it and just chew it in as long as possible to cure, well, to disinfect or fight infections of the throat, nose, mouth, teeth, and so forth, gum. And it can also be taken as a mother tincture, so a certain number of drops in water and then swallowed several times a day, or also dried propolis were taken in capsules.
Now, and we know of treatments in wound care where we put honey on wounds. Do you think that that works because there might be some propolis in the honey?
Yes, among other things, because of the propolis. One could also use the propolis maybe straight pure. I've heard about treatment like that for burnt people, I think.
It does work. I mean, it's a little messy, obviously.
Yeah.
It can be a little messy to use, but it does work. I mean, if you were in a situation where you had a wound and you didn't have access to other things, I think honey would be a good way to do it.
Yeah.
Keep the wound clean, Now, your next section is treatment for... I'm sorry, go ahead. You had something to say?
No, I just said, of course, it's easier to just swallow a pill. It's less messy than putting propolis and all that, But, well...
It is, but if you have a wound, consider this. If you have a wound, you're going to have to do some sort of wound treatment, you see?
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean... I take care of these, you know, horrific wounds. So we're doing something. So we just change what we're doing. You know, it's not like you can't treat the wound. You have to treat it at least every 2 to 3 days. So you got to decide what you're going to do with it.
Yeah.
Now, we have treatments. The next chapter, 7, is treatments for 50 common infections using natural antibiotics. And I think this is a great resource for people, you know, different ideas for different infections and this just has a lot of great information in it.
Yeah. What I did is for each illness, gave different suggestions, one with mother tinctures or teas, and one with essential oils. And also I varied the treatment. I gave a treatment which... drops to drink or drops to put essential oils, for example, to rub on the skin about the region which has to be treated.
Right, because they do absorb.
Many different ways of dealing with the same illness.
Well, the rest of the book is about maintaining balance in the body cellular terrain, detoxification, really great stuff, but unfortunately... We have about 2 minutes left, so would you like to give your contact information?
Yes. I've got a website on which I present my different books. There are extracts of the books, articles, videos, and the address of my website is 3 W's, and then Christopher Vasey, in one word, Christopher Vasey. Vasey is V-A-S-E-Y. And then .ch, so Christopher Vasey in one word, .ch. And you find a presentation of all my books and articles, videos, even books which are not sold anymore, but people can download for free.
Well, wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Vasey. It's been a wonderful discussion, and I really am impressed with this book. I think it's one I'm going to use because people are always asking me if there's anything natural when I try to give them an antibiotic, and I'm going to recommend what you have in this book. But thank you again for joining us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
And we will be back next week with Temple of Health Radio Show. Please join us next week.